Welcome to the Rebel Entrepreneur podcast, and today's episode is about being in business for a year. A lot can happen in a year, and we have someone who's been on the podcast before. Stephen Payton came on the Takeover series and asked me questions, and today I'm in charge and I get to ask the questions, which I'm very excited about. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm ready to be asked questions.
I love it. So a year ago, you took the decision to start your own business and change everything up. Why did you do that? What happened?
So to tell that story, I kind of have to rewind because that's when I fully separated from my employer.
So fully separated. It sounds like a divorce.
Yes. Well, the funny thing is I still help them out on a consulting basis somewhat. And that's one of my lessons is everything is negotiable. I think we've hit that a lot. So in November of 2021, I put in my resignation and I said, I'm starting my own business. I am leaving, we'll say effective January 31st. But I'm going to my own business. So if y'all would like me to stick around at a reduced time and would like me to help with the transition and, you know, help the next person transition easier, happy to stick around because I am in the States. So insurance is a big, big deal for us, having that health insurance covered. My wife was also 7 months pregnant in that January. So, so there was a lot of life happening. And, so I was like, yeah, I could stay around. So I was able to keep benefits and I finally went full time into my business, October of 2022. So I ended up staying on, 8 months longer than I anticipated, ended up essentially working my business full time and working a full time job, which, you know, and having a newborn, that may have not been the best decision. So, you know, it happened. We're here. I survived. My wife survived. She doesn't want me to do that again. But yeah. And I had also had my business as a side hustle. I started by answering an ad on Craigslist. So I'm an accountant. Somebody was looking for a bookkeeper. And I said, hey, I can help.
Awesome.
And still working with him today. Actually had a call with him earlier, just checking in, seeing how he's doing. So started that. After a few years, that was like 2 or 3 years of just him. And then I was like, I could do this for more people. And decided to start putting myself out there, started building enough clients to give me the confidence to leave my full-time job. And I thought there would be a gap, but that, like I said, that negotiable part of, hey, I'm leaving, but I can help, allowed me to bridge the gap and allow my income to come up for my revenue for the business to where I really didn't have to dip into savings at all once I started full-time.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's fantastic. And I think I'd love to highlight for everyone listening, Stephen got his first client on Craigslist. And I think that's just so important to highlight. You never know where it's coming from. A Facebook ad, a this, a that, a Craigslist. It doesn't really matter. It's like someone says they want something and you go, I'll do it. Give it a go.
And that was even weirder. It was even crazier because I was listening to a lot of financial independence podcasts, which is how I found you at the time. And somebody had brought up like having a side hustle. And I was like, huh. And I was working public accounting, which is infamous for having insane hours, which I had good hours, but wasn't quite the horror stories. But I was like, oh, well, let's see what happens. Or I really just pulled up Craigslist to be like, what's out here? And I just happened to see this ad, like the first time I signed on to Craigslist in the gig section is where I was. And I was like, oh, I should reach out to him. And the next morning, when my wife woke up, I told her, I did something last night. And she was like, oh God, what did you do?
Something last night on Craigslist. This is going dark. Yeah, where's this story going?
Yeah. I was like, I told someone I could do their accounting for them. It didn't go the way she thought it was. So like literally the first time I got onto gigs, applied. I don't know. Started working with him. Kept signing on to gigs because, like, well, that worked out. Let me see if there's anybody else. Never saw anything close to that. So it was just like one of those weird, right place, right time. Happened to look at it at the right time, and it was weird, but it worked out. Now I'm a business owner.
So you went full time.
Mm-hmm.
What did it feel like going from, because you kind of went full time in employment to part time employment, part time business,
mm-hmm.
and then you went full time business. What did that transition feel like without the structure of going into the office, doing the other work?
Yeah. So I spent the past couple weeks really reflecting on my first year in business. And one of my big lessons was, there's a Jocko Willink. Are you familiar with Jocko? Good. You know, that guy. Navy SEAL. He says, discipline is freedom.
Yes.
And I don't think I really understood that until I was running my own business. Mm. In that you have freedom, but unless you have the discipline to use that freedom correctly, like, it's not free. Like, you are pulled in every which way. Like, you're like, ah, I'll do that tomorrow because I can, whatever. And, like, you know, I have two kids. I'm married. I have to get work done when work's supposed to get done. And it took me a while to figure that out, which is weird because I'm, you know, very goal-oriented. I had it on the side, so I knew what to expect. You know, I was performing really well in my job. But for some reason, and I think maybe it was a recovery of burnout from having 8 months of working both, but for some reason, when I left my job and was working full time, there was definitely a transition period where I was having trouble, like, motivating myself to do the business and, like, do the work that I had gotten for myself. And, like, that was unexpected. Like, I thought, ah, now I'm just doing my own thing. I'm going to crush it. But there was definitely this recovery period and, like, hey, I need to be structured, and a period of discovery of, like, hey, you have flexibility, but if you use it all the time, it's not flexibility. Like, you end up having to work at night and weekends, and you end up right back where you were when you had a full-time job. So,
isn't that fascinating? I think I had a similar thing when I first started my own business. Was some days I struggled to motivate myself, and I'd watch a movie at lunchtime or whenever, and, like, I couldn't do it for whatever reason. And it took a while to find that discipline just to get into the work. And mm-hmm. I don't think I ever really understood that discipline is freedom until later on. Yeah. And now I'm like, oh, obviously. Like, yeah. If you're disciplined with your money, you can save and invest, and it will buy the ultimate freedom of you can mm-hmm. do whatever you want with your time. And if you're disciplined with your business, it buys the ultimate freedom. And mm-hmm. discipline up front equals freedom to do what you actually want. But you really don't realize that. I think, yeah, going into a job, the structure, you turn up at 9, you have your tasks, you sit at your desk, you do what you do. That structure means you don't really have to be disciplined in a way, because mm-hmm. there's someone overwatching you. There's someone, like, if you don't do it, you get in trouble. Yeah, and finding your own discipline. So how did you turn that round? What happened? What changed?
I think it's just, I eventually figured out, hey, you can't just not do the work. Like, you gotta be disciplined. And you start going, oh, well, maybe that's why people work, you know, 9 to 5 every day, because of the structure. And, like, it is something, like, I think when you are working in the corporate world, you take for granted the structure, the systems, the things that have gotten into place. Yeah, it may be messy, but there's, like, a, okay, you work here and you do this, and, like, there's a point. Whereas, like, when it's just you and you're starting from scratch, you're like, okay, I need to go buy technology. I have to make all the decisions. Like, what do I work on today? No one's telling me. I have to figure that out. Like, mm-hmm. you know, what's the balance of networking versus doing you know, the work? What's the, you know, the Michael Gerber e-myth? Like, what's the balance of being a technician versus an entrepreneur versus a implementer? Like, how do you balance those correctly in a way? So for me, I think it was just a matter of, I think there was that recovery time period. And then eventually I just had the realization of, like, for me, it would be better for me to be disciplined and do the work in a shorter condensed schedule and then just be done and feel good about, like, now I have free time versus, like, just being waking up one morning and being like, I'm not working today. I'm going to take my free time now. I found that planning out free time and then, for lack of a better term, executing on free time is a lot more satisfactory than, like, the, I'll do that tomorrow. 'Cause you just don't have the weight of, oh, this needs to get done. So I found that to be true. And I think it's just a matter of thinking I was experimenting with my work schedule and being like, oh, I can do this. And then it just not working. And then ending up back at the conclusion of, oh, like, normal hours actually works for me.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, there is something about normal hours which can be quite satisfying and can also give you the ability to just switch off when it's done. Mm-hmm. I think it changes over periods of your life as well, because this is now 8:50 at night for me running the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we went out for dinner. We had lovely pierogies in Poland. And then we worked for 2 hours on Rebel Finance School. Then I've come back. And most of my work has been this evening, but I'm fine. I'm excited. I'm happy. Right. I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that structure. I think one of the things that hit me was the sentence, if it's to be, it's up to me. And I used to just repeat that. And then I couldn't really watch movies or play with Lego in the day afterwards, because I was like, well, that feels like a waste of time. I could be building my future. I could be building something incredible. And it definitely changes you. Definitely changes you. That's fascinating.
For sure.
So what else is on your list of things you have learnt in your first year, Stephen?
Yeah. So further on the discipline category, I've come to realize that people respect rules. So if you set rules for yourself, people tend to respect them. Like, if I just give you a no on something, there may be pushback of like, well, are you sure? But if you say, I'm an accountant, so people come to me asking to be on the board of their nonprofit so they can have an accountant on there and potentially a treasurer. And if I just say no, there's usually a, oh, hey, like, are you sure? Like, we really could use you. But if you say, no, I'm already at my capacity. I've hit my max. I'm at, I only allow myself 2 boards and I'm already on 2. So no, thank you. They're like, oh, okay. So I think setting up rules for yourself to guide your decisions and making no's easier, because it's really easy to say yes to everything. But when you say yes to something, you say no to 1,000 things. So you have to be, willing to say no to things, even if it sounds like a good opportunity. Not everything's equal in that case. Another rule that I've set up for myself is I don't take meetings on Mondays. And I also don't take meetings in the morning. For me, I get my best work done in the morning, before lunchtime. So I just, unless it's a specific circumstance, I will take meetings, but my Calendly link that I send out to people doesn't allow them to book on Monday, or in the mornings. It only allows them Tuesday through Friday, in the afternoons. And that's just, I get my best work done and I need to focus in the morning. And if I start with the meeting, my day doesn't go as planned. And so I found that for me, it's best to have those rules. Again, I can break them for, you know, special circumstances and whatnot, but that I found that for me, that works the best. And I've never gotten, why can't I click on Monday? Like, no one cares. they don't care when the meeting is. They just want clarity on that they can schedule it and that I'll be there whenever they schedule it.
I think there's several things that are genius there. One, that you've identified your best productivity time is in the morning, and then you've protected it is number 2. This is my time. Now I'm going to do it. And we kind of do a similar thing for calls. I actually hate having calls in my diary. I feel like it stops me from doing what I actually want to do. And I love chatting to people when I get there, don't get me wrong. But it's like, I just want to be writing an article or creating a course or doing something like that. So I only ever schedule calls, if I can help it, for 2, 3 p.m., something like that. Right. And I use all the morning for me. I get some food and then I go to the gym and have calls in the early afternoon. And I tried to match it to where my energy is best. And I think that's super clever what you've done there. And I'd love everyone to get that. Work out when you're at your best, you're most focused, and then protect that time to do the most important work. It's absolutely fantastic. And if your most important work is being on the phone to people, then do that at that time. Yeah. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But your important work is, I'm assuming, actually doing the work for the clients.
Yeah. And the along those lines, one of my big learnings is you should question the, you have to do these. Like, you have to do this, you have to do that. Like, the, like, you may come to the same conclusion like I did on the work schedule thing. But if you don't ask yourself the question, you're just going to do something because someone told you to, rather than because you came to the conclusion that it works best for you. So for
question everything.
Yeah. For me, the big thing, you know, like, the normal work schedule works for me. I have two kids. They go to school 3 days a week. Like, the normal work schedule lines up with that. So, like, that makes sense for me to do a normal work schedule. Whereas one of my countercultural takes is, I really dislike social media. And I also believe that you're better off, not having a social media versus doing a social media haphazardly and, not updating it and making it look bad. So I just want to give everybody permission that, you know, you can build your business in other ways besides having to get on social media. I like to think of social media more as a tool. And it's a tool in the tool belt, and it can be very powerful if you do it correctly and if you know what you're doing and you enjoy doing it. But for me, the negativity and stuff that, and the distraction that came from social media, and also coupled with, I will give that accounting, you know, most people aren't picking their accountant off of a Facebook ad or something. So I'm much better off, you know, networking and getting to know people and getting their trust, than just posting, about cool things on social media. So that was one thing I also like, the question everything. And specifically for me, it manifested as social media. Like, you have to do it. You have to do it. If you're a business owner, you have to do it. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I do.
Do I?
I'm here and I haven't done it. So this year for my business, I haven't done it for my business at all. Other than I do have a website, but that's not social media. That's just a landing page for people to go to. Could I have generated more business? Possibly. But I prefer how I've done things and my mental state from not having to sign on. So.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I always used to say in the workshops, think of social media as a communication tool. You've got the telephone, you've got a fax machine, and you've got Twitter. Or whatever it is. That's a bit of a joke sentence, but you know what I mean. It's like a communication tool to reach out to people, to find leads, to do things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we do get leads. People say in the Facebook group, do you know an accountant? Who's the best accountant to use? And some accountants will use Facebook and the groups and win all their business theirs. Other accountants, our specific accountant in the UK, she was fantastic at using Google Business. So find my business on Google. She became one of the top ones, and that brought in a huge amount of leads. So there's different ways to win business. Some people are great at networking, and I love that you've challenged the, you have to do this.
Yeah.
Because there is always more than one way to do it. Always more than one way to do it. And if it fits with you, if you're excited, yeah, you've got to go for it. The key is, though, do you have enough business? Is the business, are you okay? Do you have enough business? Because if you're not using social media and you have enough business and you're happy, then you don't have to.
Yeah, I have enough business. It's one of those things that, like I said before, like, I was able to go full time into my business. I haven't had to dip into the savings unless we wanted to. Like, we did We did go in and buy a new air conditioner for our house because we live in Texas, and I don't know if you know anything about our weather, but it was over 105 like every day Fahrenheit this summer, and we couldn't go without a good air conditioner. So but we didn't dip into that because we weren't making money with the business. So the business is good. I've been able to network, and really some of my largest clients have come from just reigniting friendships with people I used to work with. Like,
wow.
So like that, you know, it, and I did that in a human way and not just reaching out on LinkedIn or whatever. And I could do that, and I'm not ruling it out in the future. But version one me was like, you know what? I could either spend time trying to figure out social media, or I can go rub elbows with people and make genuine connections. And I found that to be more important for me in this version. And, you know, maybe we reassess at another time, but for now that's what's working for me.
So tell me, how specifically did you reignite those relationships that led to business? Did you just email them, call them, send a carrier pigeon? How did it actually start?
So for the most part, it's just sending a text and being like, hey, haven't heard, how are you doing? Like, it was just that simple. And like one of my largest clients, I went to a going away party for somebody, and one of my former coworkers, who is actually my boss, was there too. And I was just chatting with her about what I was doing. And she was like, oh, really? Like, I may have something for you. And she gave me my largest client.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so it's just like, there's a power to telling people what you're doing, and making sure people know. I went to a friend's going away party and came back with business. You just never know what's going to happen if you don't tell people what you're doing. And then it's just like keeping those connections. And for me, it's luckily I'm at a point in the business where I can make a sale, but I don't need to. So if something comes, great. But like, for me, with those connections with my old coworkers, it's been more about like, it's fun to have connections with your old coworkers and see how they're doing and root for them and like have genuine conversations and not look from the bleachers and get the highlight reel, you know, but like really talk to them and see how they're doing. So it's been fun to just connect with friends more so than anything. So that's really what I did. Are you familiar with Jordan Harbinger?
Yes. The school of life.
Yeah, he has the Jordan Harbinger Show podcast now, but he has a free networking course that I think is genius. It's on his website, and it's just about his big thing is the build the well before you get thirsty, like make the connections now before you need them, because it's easier to do that when you don't need them than when you do, and it's like a point of desperation. And so he's got a really good networking. It's like, if you rip through all of them quickly, it's like a 2-hour course, and it's free, or at least it was. But like something as simple as like one of the tips is like scroll down to the bottom of your conversations and your texting, and like text those people, the people you haven't texted in a really long time, and just like easy stuff like that. Like, it's like, oh, clearly I haven't talked to this person in a long time. Just send them a text like, hey, haven't talked to you in a while. How are you? And like, there's easy, like low hanging fruit, things like that to build connection with dormant ties. So highly recommend that.
I'm almost tempted to do that right now. Pull out my phone, scroll right down to the bottom and see who's there and send them some messages. And yeah. I think that actually should be the homework. If you're listening to this right now, like, don't ditch the podcast. We've still got stuff to go. Yeah. But scroll to the bottom of your text. Hit pause. Scroll to the bottom of your text. Find who was there. Maybe you forgot to reply to them. Maybe it's just been a while. And send 5 or 10 people a message now. Start some conversations. I think that's a genius action. Thank you, Jordan Harbinger. Thank you, Stephen. A genius action. Do it now. This is how you build connections. You just stay in touch with people.
And that's absolutely happened where I got looked at the conversation and like they said something and I never responded, and it's like, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. Oops. I was going through my conversations and I just saw this, like, and then you kind of pick it back up. But you know, it's just like I said, like it's not even about the business, but it's just connecting with people that you somebody has to take the initiative in a
yes.
in a friendship, and you know they're not going to be like, ugh, Alan's texting me today. They're like, oh, cool, Alan's texting me. I haven't heard from him in a while. You know, like I think we overestimate, like, oh, well, they may not like my text, and if they don't, they'll ignore you. Like,
yes,
and it took you 2 seconds.
That's okay. Yeah,
and that's okay. So you know, like, it's led to reigniting some cool friendships that I hadn't. Like I moved towns in like the seventh grade, and I reconnected with my seventh grade best friend because I looked him up and said, "Hey, I haven't talked to you in 15 years. How are you?" You know, like, and it wasn't even about business, but it was just about that connection piece. And like, I think that's one lesson I learned as well, is especially like if it's just you, even if you have a team, it's different. It can be lonely. Like if you don't have connection with people, if you don't have a business partner, like you're it. Like even if you have people working for you, it's a different relationship. And it goes for CEOs too. Like if you're running a company, like your relationship with the people you work with is a little different. Like if you're the leader, they're not being 100% themselves as much as they want to, you know? And it's just, there's just a little dynamic whether you like it or not. So that's one thing I learned, is like, I have to find ways to connect with people, because if I don't, I work for myself. I don't have coworkers. I do have somebody who works with me now, and we're good friends, but again, it's a little different than if we were just coworkers. If I don't do that, I can go a full day, I'll see my family. But if I don't work on seeing other people, I could go weeks without seeing another human being, because like it can happen. And so you got to make sure you don't hit that loneliness. Like I heard on a podcast this morning, and I've heard it several times, like loneliness is as bad for you as smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
Yeah. So like that human connection is so important. And like if it's a text and you get a lunch together, like great. But if it's just like knowing who your neighbor is, that works too. Like it's a huge deal.
Yes, definitely. I was just reading the book Forever Young, and it was fantastic, a longevity book. Mm-hmm. And there were two chapters in there that really surprised me, but I agreed with massively, which were connection, the community that is around you, and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who live long and healthy lives have a community they're part of, and they have a purpose in the world. They have a reason to live. They have a reason to get up. They have a reason to do things. And I think that's hugely important. And sometimes we lose our purpose and we have to remind ourselves why we're doing this. And I'm bad at staying in touch. I get excited about what I'm doing. I don't stay in touch. I need to get better at that as well. But then, you know, no one is ever, sometimes you think, oh, I can't text that person. I haven't messaged them back since however long ago. They're going to hate me. It's like, they never actually hate you. They're like, no. Oh, you know, oh, it's great to hear from you. But yeah, someone has to start. Someone has to be the spark, the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just never know where it's going to lead. And that goes for like networking and stuff too. Like if you're at an event and you kind of see someone who's off in the corner, like they probably don't hate you, and they probably aren't trying to stand off from you. They probably are just like, oh, I feel awkward, and like, I don't want to walk up to anybody. So like walking up to that person and starting a conversation, you never know. They may be your best friend. One of my good friends I've met locally, I met because we had our sons playing on the playground. It was just me and my son, him and his son. And I looked at his shoes, and I've been doing triathlons lately, and he was wearing shoes that looked like runner's shoes. And I went up to him and I said, I see your shoes. Do you run? And he's like, oh yeah, I'm going to do my first triathlon soon. And I'm like, no way. And now we're really good friends. Like we would go run on Saturday mornings together. Like his kids are the same age as my kids. Like just because I walked up to a random stranger because he had shoes that looked like he exercised.
That's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Like I don't, That one still is like, that was so weird. Like, it's weird that happened, but it did. And now he's one of my really good friends. So
the universe has rewarded you for taking action.
Apparently. But yeah, along those lines, in terms of like connection and only seeing my family, one of the things that I also realized was working from home was not working for me. Like,
oh, wow.
I, with a 1 and a 3-year-old who only go to school 3 days a week, it's not even them like bursting in on me or anything. It's me like hearing them having fun and me being like, I want to go play. Like, that sounds like more fun than this accounting stuff I'm doing. So for me, I actually, I don't want to spend extra on stuff that I don't have to spend on. But one of the best purchases I've made was I rented office space about 5 minutes from my house.
Oh, wow.
I get the benefits of working from home because my commute is nothing. And I still go home for lunch some days and maybe get a nap, you know, every once in a while, if it's needed. But I also don't have the distractions of home. And I also don't have, and when I say distractions of home, I'm not just talking about the kids, but it's also the laundry basket that's full. It's the pantry. It's the, you know, just all the stuff at home, the messy living room that you're like, ah, I should probably do that at some point. So like, that was one of the best investments I made and probably coincides with me like actually being like, okay, now I'm going to work, is renting that office space and saying, you know what, working from home, I've done it for 3 years. At this point, I think I need to try something different. And now I, a guy I really like is Cal Newport, and he calls it work from near home, where you don't have the distractions of home, but you work close enough to home that you get the benefits. So I highly recommend for people in my situation.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, it's so easy to go, I just need to do the washing and I just need to do this and I just need to do that. And quite often it's just procrastination techniques. It's just
for sure
putting off doing what you actually need to do. And how do I know that? Because I did it. That's what you do. I just need to prepare this, do this, set up this, make this happen. We've all done it.
Yeah,
my technique is to go to a cafe and sit there with a coffee and just work from a cafe. That tends to work quite well for me. But yeah, having a space you can walk to and then get some coffee and sit and do some work is a fantastic way. Cafe with headphones on. I feel like the world evaporates.
Yeah,
and then it's just me and the computer.
Yeah. And again, it comes back to knowing what works for you. Like, some people work from home and they have no problems and it's their best place they can get work done. And that's great. And some people want to go drive 30 minutes because they like having the commute. That's great too. For me, the balance of five minute commute plus not having to work at home and having my if I'm here, I'm working space was what worked best for me.
Genius. Awesome.
Another thing I learned was around technology. So one is I put, sometimes dumb tech is better tech. and what I mean by that is things that have a very specific purpose. So like, take for instance, like the Kindle. What can you do on a Kindle?
Read.
You can read. Can you do anything else?
The newer versions are a bit fancier, I think. But yeah, I still only use it to read. That's it.
Right. You can read on your phone too. But you can also play games. You can surf the web. You can listen to a podcast. You can look at your calendar. You can check your email. You can do all these. You can text somebody. So sometimes, like, for focus, it's better to have a tool that's got a very specific purpose. And if I pull out my Kindle, I know what I'm doing. I'm reading. I'm not going to do anything else. I got a tablet that cost me all in $600, which sounds ridiculous. And all it can do is write. It's a Remarkable.
I heard about these.
Yeah. All you can do is write, and you can transfer it to your phone, and so you can see it on your computer and put PDFs in there. But really, you can read and write, and that's it. But it has been an awesome productivity tool for me. Cause like when I have it, it's like, I'm not tempted to go click on another tab or my notes app isn't working or whatever. I don't have to keep up with notebooks anymore. I just have to keep up with this one tablet. Like sometimes getting the tool that fixes the problem and only fixes that problem is like, that's good. Like having the multi-purpose tool is not always the best tool.
I love that. Sometimes I'm doing something and I switch to Outlook because I need to put something in my calendar, and then my eyes go and see the emails, mm-hmm. and then I've like open one, read it without thinking.
And then you're gone.
And then, yeah, 5 minutes later, I'm like, what the hell was I doing? Where was I? How did this happen? And the cognitive load of switching between tasks and being distracted, just picking up your phone to look up something. I could pick it up now and there is a stream of,
yeah,
what do you call them? Notifications.
Uh-huh.
And you just go, well, like, I could get lost in that.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't be doing what I want to do. So yeah, the ability to focus. I love that. Dumb tech is sometimes the best tech.
Yes. And staying on the technology, and this goes for team members too. Something else I realized is technology and team members are only as useful as I allow them to be or utilize them. So what I mean by that is if I hire someone, they're only going to be as good as how much I can delegate to them in that, like, I have to let them do the job that I hired them to do. And same thing with technology. Like you can buy a piece of technology to fix an issue, but if you don't take the time to set it up properly, it's just not being used. So like people, tech, whatever, like you have to take that time to get it integrated into your system or integrate them into your system. Otherwise, it's a waste of money. And also along with that, it's going to take longer than you want it to. Like it just is.
It everything always
takes,
does.
Everything takes longer than you want it to. You're like, oh, this will take this. Like add, you know, double it and then add 50%. You know, like it's just going to take longer. You don't remember that you've been doing this for a long time. So they're not going to be as fast as you because you've been doing this for a couple years or multiple years. Like a new person's not going to know your system. Like it takes a while to get them integrated. If you buy the technology out of the box, it's going to take a little while to get integrated with your team, integrated with your systems, doing exactly how you want it to. Like it's going to take some time and fine tuning. So having the attitude of versions of like, okay, this is version one. And then we got to get there before we get to version two. And then we got to get to there before we get to three. And just having patience, because out of the box, an employee or tech isn't going to just magically fix your issues.
My business partner, Simon, would call it slowing down to speed up.
Yes.
And you probably know I like to get things done. I hate it. I hate slowing down to speed up. I'm just like, can't we just get on with it? Can't we just get on with it? But it just makes sense. It's just what you actually have to do is, okay, let's sit down, figure out your plan, help you get started, show you the processes, and then I can like leave that with you. And then we've doubled productivity. But if I leave you to try and figure it out yourself, then I end up spending more time fixing it later and going weird. And yeah, slowing down to speed up would be our version of saying what you've said. Yeah, and sometimes we bought tech and we bought things and we don't set it up right, and then you don't get any value out of it, and it actually costs you time and money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the along with the slowing down to speed up, I think it's a James Clear thing. Something else I realized is that end results are a lag indicator of your processes and your habits. I think that's an Atomic Habits thing, but like, if you're just looking at your top line revenue, that doesn't necessarily mean your processes have been off. It also doesn't mean that you've been crushing it. Like you could have gotten lucky and it got there, but like you to track the things that are the process making steps. So I believe Simon had talked about before, like having the jar and like putting the, you know, the paper clip or whatever, the little toys, from into the jar on the calls that he needed to make. Like that's a much better indicator of whether you're doing the right processes and that the business and the results will follow if you stick to your processes and you have a good process. But results are not always the best. It sounds weird, but the results are not always the best thing to look at whenever you're looking at the health of your company and the health of what you're doing.
Yeah, kind of the results will tell you what happened 6 months ago.
Yes.
So you're kind of looking at something that's very out of date. Mm-hmm. And then you start doing changes now and your results will not change quickly.
Yeah.
And that's always the expectation, is if I'm going to make changes now, it should be fixed by tomorrow. It won't. The changes now take time to happen. And then 6 months later, you'll be able to look at your figures and go, oh, those changes I made 6 months ago, I've worked hard, it's compounded, it's actually returned.
Mm-hmm.
But the patience to wait that 6 months.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like everything. Like it's finances. It's health. It's all of it. Mm-hmm. Like you're not going to get the results overnight. Like there is no get rich quick. There is no get skinny quick. There's no get ripped quick. There is like all the successes you see are, you know, successes 10 years in the making. Like it just is not set up. Like we have to be patient, and that's unfortunate. Because sometimes I don't want to be patient. I want the results now.
I want it now. I remember reading The 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss, and I changed my diet. I changed everything. Katie did it as well. And then I think a week went past. And
like,
I was
I'm ready to have a six pack. Thank you.
Well, it wasn't even I'm ready. It's like, why hasn't it worked? Yeah. It's been a week. Why hasn't it worked? And I was genuinely annoyed. And Katie was like, did you miss the bit on the podcast where he said, on the book, where he said it's 6 to 9 months to see the results? I'm like, well, I'm not waiting that long.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you have to do the work for that long to see the bit at the end. And then you get the long ones that bake people's noodles, like financial independence.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean I'm working now for something that will happen in 10 years?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one to get the mind around, for sure.
But the 10 years is going to go. It's going to disappear. Yeah. You're going to arrive there.
Yeah. I also like the thought of, like, you can't back out of a problem that's been festering for 5 years in a week. Like, it took you 5 years to get for that problem to manifest. Like, it's not going to take a week to fix. Like, it's going to take time. And again, everything takes longer than you want it to. It just does.
So just keep doing the activity every day and you will get there. That's the message from this, I think, is yes. If you just keep doing the things. Stephen went out networking, he kept doing the work, he kept finding the customers, and he's built a business over the period. And for years, Katie and I, every week, would speak about financial independence and saving and investing. And every week we did the work to make progress on that. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, you go, oh, we've done it. But you kind of just, you just have to do the thing repeatedly.
Yeah. I think consistency is more important than, you know, going all out for a week or two. Like if you can find something that you can consistently change, whether that be your savings rate, adding a couple vegetables into your diet, or I'm going to get to a networking event every week, those results add up. It's the compounding gains, and they'll add up eventually. It's not going to be as fast as you want it to, but it will add up, and it will, you will see results eventually. So, yeah, I think consistency is a lot more important than getting it perfectly right.
It is. And the fast as you want it to bit happens all at once at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's the crazy bit, is you do all that work for 6 months, a year, 2 years, and then the results all happen overnight at the end, which is why the myth of the overnight success happens, because mm-hmm. it looks like it's all happened in a tiny window at the end, but it's like 3 years of setup or five years of setup. And then the exponential crazy growth makes it look as though it happens in a flash. So know the results are coming. If you do the work over the long period, the results are coming. It will happen. And it will feel like it comes all at once.
Yes.
But you just have to keep going. It's in that middle grind bit where you're making it happen.
Yeah. Yep. One of the things, because I've been talking about health and how it's kind of like business and stuff. But one of my other big realizations is your business is affected by your actions outside of your business. So business is just a piece of your life. Life is a series of interconnecting parts. You got family, friends, business, health. You know, it's all interconnecting, and that if you're not taking care of your family, if you're not taking care of your health, if you're not taking care of your finances, like, it's going to make your business a lot harder. Or if you take too much care of your business and you ignore those other things, it's going to come back and haunt you at some point as well. So my examples here were, for me, exercise is super important. If I'm active, it allows me to have clarity, allows me to have more energy, which then turns around and I'm able to apply to the business, and allows me to go be more efficient or do more networking or whatever needs to happen at that time. I came in with a financial cushion, which makes life a lot less stressful, and it allows you to make decisions that you may not otherwise make, because you don't have to make the sale. This is not make or break. Another client will come along. So you don't have to say yes to something just because you need the money. So having that financial cushion is huge. For me, I already hit a lot on the connection piece of, like, having connections with other people is important. Having that community, and connection. And then I also kind of hit on it, but I'll say it a little differently, is it's okay to have rest time periods in your business. There's going to be times that you're going harder. There's going to be times that you don't have to go as hard, but they're a lot more enjoyable if you actually acknowledge them and they're intentional versus like, I'm not feeling it today.
Then you just feel guilty afterwards as opposed to intentionally enjoying it.
Yeah, you don't get to enjoy it. You just are kind of doing it, and you're kind of, it's a much more lazy feeling where, you know, if I say I'm not working on Thursday, and then I don't work on Thursday, I'm like, okay, I told myself I wasn't working on Thursday. If I wake up on Thursday and I'm like, not going to work today, it feels a lot worse. I feel really lazy. I feel, you know, almost sick of just like I'm just burned out and stuff. And it's just a lot better if you're like, okay, I'm going to take this day off intentionally, and you just feel a lot better about it.
Yes. Or I'm intentionally going to work this morning and then have a nap at lunchtime. And I'm going to savor that nap like you would not believe.
Yes. the midday nap. Wonderful. I got to make sure I don't have anything important to do after that, because sometimes there's that grogginess and you're like, probably shouldn't have taken that long of a nap. But sometimes you got to do it.
So where are you going from here? You've done a year full time in the business.
Mm-hmm.
What are your plans? Where are you heading next?
So let's talk about my fears. So I'm kind of in this place where I'm comfortable. I'm making enough to feed the family, have a lot of balance. I feel really good about where income is. That being said, I do have concentration risk. For those not familiar with concentration risk, basically I have a large amount of my revenue is concentrated on one or two clients. So if I were to lose one of those clients, my business would look significantly different than it would if I keep them. So, it's the 80-20 principle, essentially, of 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your clients. So I'm comfortable in terms of what I'm making, my balance. Part of me wants to grow. Part of me is like, I am enjoying the balance. I have 1 and 3-year-old. So I think I go back and forth on my fears of, my fear of growing is, will it turn my balance out of whack? But also I'm like, is that really my fear? Or is my fear that I'm going to put myself out there and I'm not going to get more people who want to work with me? So is it kind of like a scarcity/rejection mindset? And then I don't want to grow. Is that me being comfortable, or is that me being afraid of wanting to, or like, what is it going to be like if I have to hire multiple people, and can I manage that? And is it like fearing that? Like, what are actually my fears? And like, am I saying it's because I'm comfortable, or is it because I'm afraid of rejection? You know, that sort of thing. So that's where I'm at.
Interesting. I love it. So I have one direct answer for you. Uh-huh. You said, is it going to throw my balance out of whack if I grow? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
It is.
I know.
It's going to throw things in the air. It's going to change everything. Systems will change. You'll expand. You'll learn new things. You won't like some of it. You'll love other bits of it. Like, it's going to change. And I guess the thing is, do you want to proactively take the change, or do you want to have it forced upon you at some stage, mm-hmm. by a client that says they're leaving, by something happening? And change will happen whether you like it or not. So I guess the question is, do you want to accept it? And the change doesn't have to be to grow. The change can be whatever it is, but change mm-hmm. is happening.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. I haven't thought of it about that way of like, regardless of whether you want it to or not, like, it will change.
It's
like,
coming.
It's coming. And one of the things I wrote down is like, fearing, I think this is this may be a Tim Ferrissism, I'm not sure, but the fearing a specific situation is somewhat pointless, because if it does come true, you just had to fear it twice rather than once. And also, if you dwell on something, you have a tendency to make it come true.
Mm-hmm. We all create what we're most afraid of, which is both ridiculous and annoying. And I watch so many people do it. They're afraid of losing the client, so they do daft things to try and make them happy, which actually has the opposite effect. They're afraid of losing money in the stock market, so they sell at the wrong time. Like, everyone creates what they're afraid of, which is really annoying. Mm-hmm. So the best thing to do is go, am I really afraid of this? Actually, it doesn't really matter. What do I want? And mm-hmm. I'm going to focus on what I want. And I'm going to drive into doing the best service for these clients whilst keeping the balance. Or I'm going to drive into growth. Or I'm going to drive into, can I do more with less hours? Or whatever it is, mm-hmm. I'm actually going to take my blinkers. I'm holding my hands up by the side of my eyes for everyone listening to the podcast. I'm going to take my blinkers. I'm not going to look at my fear. Or I'm going to have a glance and go, is that a real fear? Well, I can't do anything about that. Then I'm going to like go over here and just focus entirely on what I want. Mm-hmm. That's the key. So the question is, what do you actually want the business to look like in the next year?
I think I do want to grow the business and get a team. I think it's scary, but I think that is what I want to do. Because one of the other things I realized this year is taking vacations is both simultaneously easier and it's harder. It's easier because you can do it whenever you want. Mm-hmm. It's harder because if it's just you, or maybe you and one other person, it's coming with you.
Yes.
I think I would like to eventually take a vacation where I don't have to bring my business with me. And the only way to really do that in accounting would be to have a team that can take care of those things.
I'm sure there's processes. I would challenge there that are. Slightly. There's processes, there's ways, there's mitigating it. If you've got 10 clients, I'm sure you can ring them and say, like, I'm going to take a holiday. I know this is a weird concept in America. You don't really give holidays, but I'm actually going to leave for a while. So get all of your questions done by this date, and then I will be back on this date.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are ways you could do it. So I would just challenge you have to have a team to have a holiday.
That's true. Yeah. But I think a team is where I want to eventually end up.
If it's what you want, then that's a good thing. If you're doing it just to take a holiday, you don't have to. If you actually want to do it, let's do it.
No, I think I do want to do it, because I do think that the idea of bringing people in on the team and having a positive impact of being able to pay them and being able to introduce them to, you know, personal development, because that'll be an important part of being, like, if you're working with me, like, you're going to have to start reading books. I know you had that story about, like, you brought someone in and you're like, you have to read this. And they're like, no, I don't. And you're like, yeah, this just isn't going to work out. Like,
yeah.
Like, he that's said, important to
me. You can't force me to learn. And then I was like, oh, wow, I can't. You're right. Bye.
Yeah. This isn't going to work. Like, so I do like the idea of being able to have that impact. And, but it's scary. I think that's really what's, I think part of the fear comes from, I had two people working with me. Now I probably overhired, for what I had, but one of my larger contracts got cut in half, which it was more of an issue of they didn't have a great idea of what they needed early on. So the contract was somewhat bloated and then it got cut to like what it probably should have been.
Okay.
But you know, I was partially paying somebody off of that. And then once that got cut, I was like, well, I probably can't handle paying two people at this point. So I think that's part of the fear also is like, somebody's going to trust me with their livelihood and feeding their family. And then I'm going to get a contract cut and I'm going to be not in a position to do that anymore. I think that's where a lot of my fear comes from is like, I didn't want to do that, but it happened and I've ended up better for it. Like we've cleaned up some systems. Like I feel like we're in a better spot efficiency wise. But it still sucked. Like I didn't enjoy having to have that conversation. And like, it's not one I'd like to have again, even though I know I will eventually. Like, but it's also one of those things that like being afraid of having to fire a theoretical employee is something I shouldn't be worrying about unless I have it actually, I do have somebody who works for me, but like my fear isn't around him. My fear is around the theoretical version.
Mm.
So yeah.
Simon and I call this feeding the beast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if you hire people, you build this business and it's got so many people, then you have to feed it with work. And if you don't feed it with work, it consumes itself. You run out of cash and then you have to fire people. And we've created a bit of a beast in the UK Rebel Business School because there's a team of, I think, 14, 15 now. Mm-hmm. And you need basically 60 grand a month coming in. Otherwise, you're in trouble. And then you go, well, that's a lot of money. That's like $80,000 a month needs to appear every single month. Otherwise, we're not even breaking even.
Mm-hmm.
And that sales, that continue business has to come in for it to happen. But then you kind of just get used to it at some stage and you go, well, okay, we've got a salesperson. They're bringing in sales. They're working really hard. The marketing's working. This is happening. If we continue to do this, it works. And there is a stage you kind of get to where you go, okay, the beast does need feeding and the beast is now feeding itself because it's working. Which comes back to you mentioned the e-myth earlier, the working on the business and working in the business. If you get the business working itself, then you can have a bit more time to look at how it's working.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the fear bit, if you want to grow the team, let's do what you did for yourself and build up a little bit of a cash cushion so that you know you have a year that you can hire this person. You've got a year. Let's give it a year to make it work. And you're very clear up front. And you say to the person, like, we're going to do a year. We're going to focus on this. The team, we need to turn over this to be able to do it. And you have conversations that actually most businesses would never have with their employees, which is, this is what we need to make to do it. There's clear transparency. If I don't make that, like after a year, I won't have the money to pay for it, but I'm pretty sure we will. We're all responsible for networking, finding other clients. Like this is not just on me. This is we're in this together, which has to be when it's a small business. You have to all be in it together. So I think there's ways to do it. It's just defining the fear, coming up with some ideas of the ways to handle it, and then going, okay, I do actually want to build the business. I'm actually quite excited by a team, self-development, setting mm-hmm. targets, growing it. Mm-hmm. It's a cool mission. It is fun when you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that got me thinking of like, that fear would be a lot less if I had, like, if I built up that cushion of like, okay, I'm going to give it a year. Because even if I had a year, I could be like, okay, well, we're at 9 months. It's not looking great. Like, I could tell that person, hey, you should probably start looking for a job. Like,
yeah.
Yes. And I am happy to refer you out to like mm-hmm. have them call me. I'll tell them what happened and whatnot, which when I put it like that, I'm like, well, it's silly that I'm afraid of that. Like, that wouldn't be the end of the world. Like, we could probably get them a job. Like, there's a global accounting shortage. Like, there's a shortage of accountants that there's not enough people going into the industry. So like a talented person like would easily find a job. So yeah, when you put it like that, it makes it sound so easy. but like most things, it's simple, but not easy. Like it's hard to get that mental gymnastics right of just like, okay, I can do this and I can build the cash cushion and then I can go do the hire. And it's just, not constantly questioning yourself, but it definitely happens. Like I feel pretty confident a lot of days, but there's days where you're just like, what am I even doing? Like this is bad. Like you just go back and forth sometimes on that. And yeah, but that makes a lot of sense and something that would be, I think also it's just like when you're one going to two, it's a lot. If you're two going to three, it's a lot. Like early on, hiring people is quite a large mountain. And it's like, when's the right time? Like, do I have enough money for this? Like, will I be able to sustain this? And will I be able to invest the time to get them trained properly? So I think it's just they're hurdles. They can be jumped over. I just need to limber up and go jump.
there never is a right time.
I know.
Most entrepreneurs leave it too late. So yeah. They get to the stage where they're working all the hours possible. So then they hire someone to make it better, but they don't actually have the time to slow down, to speed up, mm-hmm. to train them to get out of it. So it's probably better to save some cash and do it earlier rather than waiting. Like some people wait until they're 120% of capacity.
Right.
Like, don't do that. Save some cash up and then do it when you're at 90% capacity and you can spend 10% training them and then get some more clients and start to grow. So mm-hmm. I would suggest doing it slightly earlier.
Yeah.
And the other bit, just about the going back and forth, your words become things and where you focus is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often people like, what am I even doing? And that question, your brain will answer any question it's given. So if you ask, what am I doing in that tone, your brain will go, we have no idea. What are you doing? And then you go into that spiral and it's not a good day. And mm-hmm. it's actually being very careful the questions you ask yourself, because the questions determine your focus and your direction. So if you start asking, well, what if it goes wrong? Your brain will answer that question. If you ask, what if it goes right? Your brain can answer that question as well. Mm-hmm. And I always remember, I think it was on the Jamie Dillon coaching series we did. She genuinely looked for what could go wrong. And I think people just do that. That's the like default thing, is like, what could go wrong? Mm-hmm. But we just need to spend 20 minutes a day thinking, what if it goes right?
Yeah.
And that'll be enough positivity to get us to look forward and start taking action. So I'd be asking you, Stephen, every day to go start asking the question, what if this all goes right?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be, I need to change my questions. That would put me in a much better mindset. Usually I'm pretty good on the mindset. Just, I think I got shook a little bit with having to let someone go. I think that shook me more than I realized it would.
And this is probably not going to help now.
Oh, dang it.
But you do get hardened to it a little bit. And it is business. People understand it. You took that person on with the best of intentions. You thought you had so much business. It changed. Things changed. It happens. And I'm sure you probably did the right thing. Like, you are genuinely a nice person. You probably did the right thing and go, well, how can I help you find something else? And we'll pay you for this amount of time and we'll look after you. And you do the right thing afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And people won't like it. And you don't like it because it's a hard conversation. But it has to be done. It's the economic basis of what happens. And sometimes you have to have those conversations. It's better off done quickly, nicely, do it well. You're going to have to do it again at some stage.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't pour from an empty cup. Like, if you self-sacrifice and pay them to the point where the business goes out of business, then you're letting other people suffer because you don't want to have a tough conversation.
Yes. And that is just ridiculous, because then it actually affects all of you and the business ends up running out of money. Mm-hmm. You don't have a living. They don't have a living. Your other member of staff doesn't have a living.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of doing it in the best way possible and helping everyone through it, you kind of just avoid the difficult conversation and it kills everyone's work. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of become famous at work for saying your success in life is directly related to the number of uncomfortable conversations you can have.
Mm-hmm.
And the more uncomfortable conversations you can have, the quicker, the more successful you will eventually be. But it's uncomfortable. And no one, you just said, I think I'm too comfortable. Well, maybe you should get a bit uncomfortable, Stephen. We need to shake you out of this comfort.
I know.
You need to get out of your air-conditioned house and get out there into the heat of Texas. Let's enter the fire and do some fun things.
Hey, it's only 77 today, so we're trending in the right direction on the weather front. Yeah, I think when I hear the uncomfortable conversations, I think for so long it was like, well, like, you got to go talk to people and talk about your services, and that's uncomfortable. And like, getting to the point where you're like, okay, this isn't so bad. Like, I can do this, and not realizing that's not the only category of uncomfortable conversations in business. Like, you have to hire people, you have to fire people. Like, there's other things that are uncomfortable, or you have to fire clients sometimes. And like, it's just awkward, but it needs to be done. And everybody's better off for it, typically in the long run. Doesn't make it any less sucky in the moment, though.
Yes. And once you've conquered business uncomfortable communication, the universe will very kindly present you with another category of uncomfortable conversations. But that's it. That's what life is. If it wasn't throwing you challenges, how can you learn? How can you develop? And the real joy in life is I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm contributing, I'm progressing. So if there wasn't challenges and uncomfort, how can you learn?
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. I'm not dreading it, but it's definitely going to be an uncomfortable moment, is that firewalk. I'm already in my head about it. Not in my head. I can do it. But it is something that I'm like, whew. Because I'm a little bit of a scaredy cat. I'm not going to lie. A little bit of a scaredy cat. So I'm gonna do it, though.
I'll be next to you. So Stephen has signed up to come to Unleash the Power Within, the Tony Robbins course in Dallas next month. We're going together with my wife, Katie. There's my friend Finn coming. We've given away the free ticket to an incredible guy called Aiden. And we're all going to be meeting up to go and do this together. So I'm very excited about it. But yes, you will be doing a fire walk, walking on fire. And if you can walk on fire, then you can hire someone and have a tough conversation. That's the general principle.
Yes, that's all it takes. That's all it takes.
Yes. And if it all goes wrong, well, who needs feet?
Yes, exactly. I'll just start doing the hand bike for my triathlons.
So let's change this quickly. Stephen, after a year in business, what's one thing you'd want to say to everyone listening? If there was one golden nugget, one closing message, one thing you'd say to the people listening that you've learned in your first year business, what would you leave them with?
I think it's question the status quo and like what's assumed to be the right answer, and figure out what works for you. That's not the same answer for everybody. And so, yes, there are some typical best practices on how to run a business. And yes, you may end up with the same answer, but at least question it and see if it's, you know, test it out. Run the mini experiment. Figure out, do I work better at night? Do I work better in the morning? Do I work better from home? Do I work better at the cafe? Like, there's all sorts of variables in business, and it's a constant process of tweaking this and tuning in that. And there's no right answer. I believe on a recent podcast you said everything's made up, and it kind of is. There's a general rules, but they're not laws. Like, they can be broken, they can be tweaked, they can be fixed to what you do. So I think that would be it, is figure out what works for you. Don't just assume whatever the best practice is for that is what needs to be done.
I love that. And Stephen, if anyone is listening to this and they need a new CPA accountant, where mm-hmm. do they find you?
So my website is mmosis.com. That's pronounced emosis. Yes. Let me tell you a story about that real fast. So my son, was born with a heart condition. And so, he had open heart surgery at 6 days old.
Wow.
Yeah. But while we were in the hospital, we read a whole lot of The Very Hungry Caterpillar by Eric Carle. I also really like the imagery of going from a caterpillar to a butterfly. And the reason I say all that is because my original business name was Moneymorphosis, so Metamorphosis, except with money. And then that was too long for a domain name, so I shortened it to just MMOSIS. So that's where emosis comes from, is Moneymorphosis down to MMOSIS. So, and my email is contact@mmosis.com.
What a wonderful story for the name. I love it. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing what you've learned. It's been incredible. I've loved having you on the show. And just a closing thought from me for everyone. We said earlier in the show, scroll down your list of messages and see who you haven't messaged for a while. There is a practical action you can take now, and you never know the magic that will come from it. Stephen, thank you for coming on the show. I will see you in Dallas soon. To everyone listening, go make it happen. Your dreams are waiting for you. Thanks for tuning in to The Rebel Entrepreneur.